So John chapter 1, page 886. I'm just going to read a few lines there from line 14 to 18, and then we'll dive in. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we have seen his glory, glory as of the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth. John bore witness about him and cried out, "This was he of whom I said, 'He who comes after me ranks before me, because he was before me.' For from his fullness we have all received grace upon grace. For the law was given through Moses. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God, the only God who is at the Father's side. He has made him known." Please keep that passage open. And I think you might have been given a sheet on the way in with a couple of points to follow along. And it'd be great to hear your thoughts afterwards. We might have 1 or 2 minutes for questions, or it'd be great to chat after we've looked at these verses together. If you think back over the last year, what do you reckon was the most uplifting news story? I reckon up there would have been last March, Nazanin Zaghari Ratcliffe being reunited with her family. That was pretty wonderful. Wonderful scenes, wasn't it? She was hugging her husband and her daughter after all that time being in prison. Now, what if I asked you what was your best moment over the last year? Again, I think you probably have, say, something relational, something where you celebrated good times with your family or some friends. I had a really good moment in April where I caught up with some old housemates who I hadn't seen for ages, and it was great to enjoy friendships being rekindled. I did think about asking my wife and children this question, what was their best time over the last year? But I thought I'm just going to be too depressed by their answer, so I won't ask them that. But relationships, often they are a great source of pain, but when relationships are going well, that's life at its best, isn't it? Sharing good times with people who love us and people who we love. Now, what about if I asked you who you would love to spend time with, some kind of celebrity or important person? If I said this evening someone's going to come and offer to take you out for a pint, who would you love to spend that evening with? Anyone from history, it could be a titan from history or a modern day celebrity. Looking at Rory over here, I'm sure he'd love to spend the evening with Jacob Rees-Mogg or Oprah Winfrey. Meghan Markle, maybe, Kanye West, Churchill, who would it be? It'd be wonderful, wouldn't it? That we'd all have somebody we would love to pick their brains, and we'd love that feeling of them coming and saying, "Oh, I'd love to take you out for a pint." I guess most of us would agree, relationships that really make life, don't they? But this lunchtime, we're thinking about the idea of having a relationship with God. Now, obviously, the Christian claim is that a relationship with God is the best thing. It trumps knowing a celebrity really well. It trumps even having special times with our friends and our family. That is the Christian claim, that we can know the God of the universe. But many, maybe you're included in this, would assume, well, that's not possible. To claim that you can know about God, let alone know God personally, well, that's just presumptuous, that's arrogant. How can little us possibly claim to know the God who stands behind the whole cosmos? Even those of us here who've been Christians for a while, I wonder if we sometimes think, is this just my imagination that I have a relationship with God? Am I deluded, like Richard Dawkins says? Is it really possible? And then there are lots of people who would say, well, actually, knowing God, that's not a good thing. That just sounds restrictive. That sounds inhibiting. Well, look at this verse again, the last verse that we read there, verse 18, page 886, chapter 1, verse 18. No one has ever seen God, the only God who is at the Father's side. He has made him known. Now, Rishi's been claiming over the last few days that he's going to fix the economy. Big claim. But there's no bigger claim than what we've just read, is there? Can you think of a bigger claim than that? No one has ever seen God, the only God who is at the Father's side. He has made God known. Two sides of this claim. There's a negative and a positive. The negative, no one has ever seen God. No one is qualified to tell us what God is like. No one's ever seen God. But then on the flip side, the positive, the only God who is at the Father's side, he has made him known. If we know Jesus Christ, John is saying, we can know God. Let's have a quick look at the negative side of that claim. So point one on the sheet, no one has seen God. And John's point is a strong point. It's a really strong thing to say. He's basically saying, if we don't know Jesus Christ, then we cannot know God. It's not possible. Imagine him saying, who he's saying this to originally, to lots of people who are very religious, lots of fellow Jews of his who would say, well, what are you talking about? We know God. We've got loads of history of prophets who've introduced us to God. But John is saying, unless you've actually seen God, which no one has done, then you don't really know God. It's a huge thing to say, but it's probably in our day and age, it's not very controversial, is it, to say no one has seen God. Now, the most famous people I think I've ever met, not that impressive, but I think had a short meeting with David Blunkett once. I shook Ann Widdecombe's hand once. That's pretty cool, isn't it? And I think I saw Jimmy White on London Bridge platform with his snooker cues. That was quite cool. But I have never seen God. And I'm guessing even amongst this august company of city workers, the great and the good of the city, I'm sure none of you have had a face-to-face, tangible, personal, physical encounter with the living God. Anyone want to say otherwise? No, I didn't think so. And the point is, on our own, we just do not really know God. We've not met him. We can obviously look at creation and see how glorious it is, and we can say some things about God. God must be good. God must be ordered. He must be very inventive. But without Jesus Christ, John is saying, we don't know how to meet God. We don't know what God really thinks about life and eternity. No one is qualified to give answers to the biggest questions that we grapple with about life and death and eternity because no one has seen God. Not even the smartest barrister can work it out. We've got to be humble. We've got to admit we are in the dark. Now, one of my favorite things doing as a kid growing up was to go with my family through a tunnel, an old railway tunnel that weaved through the Brecon Beacons Mountains. And in the middle of that tunnel, it was absolutely pitch dark. And it was a lot of fun when we were all there together. But I tell you what, I wouldn't have wanted to be there on my own for very long. I'm sure it was teeming with rats and bats and balrogs and shelobs. But when you stop and think about life is pretty scary, isn't it? We are in the dark. We don't have clarity about the big questions. We don't know what's going to happen in the future. We don't know what's going to happen when we die. We don't know what's really going on. We're just in the middle of this world trying to muddle along, but we don't really know what's happening. We're in the dark. And I think it's worth stopping and thinking, why are we in the dark? Well, the Bible, I think, gives us two big reasons why we're in the dark. It'd be great to hear your thoughts on this later, but physically, first reason, we are physically limited. We can't go and see God. I guess it's pretty obvious, but not even Elon Musk or Richard Branson with their rockets can go and find God. None of us can die and then come back and know what it's all about. The being who stands behind creation must be way beyond what our little brains can comprehend. I guess we'd all agree with that. Physically, intellectually, we are limited. But secondly, we're also morally in the dark. Each one of us has a sin problem. God is pure. God is perfect. He is light while we are in the dark. He is the perfect judge who knows exactly what we think. He sees everything that we do. And he can't just turn a blind eye to that. He can't turn a blind eye to our selfishness and our wrongdoing. We have a problem with God. We can't go and see him. Now, I used to do a job where quite often I'd have a lot of interaction with senior police officers. And it always made me feel pretty nervous. But imagine if I was a really serious criminal, not just a kind of petty criminal, but a really serious criminal, and I fell in love with a police officer or a judge. Now that relationship, it can't work, can it? If that police officer or judge does their duty, they might even like me in return, but we can't have a relationship. I couldn't sweep her off her feet by lavishing expensive meals on her at Burger King or Nando's. She'd have to arrest me. She'd have to prosecute. She'd have to condemn me if she knew what I was really like. And that's what it's like with God, but even more so. Each of us, each human being, has committed the most heinous of crimes. We've ignored God's good rule. We've tried to usurp his right to be God in our lives. We tried to call the shots ourselves, claim the crown ourselves. And so we can't just enter his presence and try to get to know God and ask him questions, because he must judge sin. We are cut off from him. He is just and fair. We just stand before him deserving condemnation and punishment. And this is our state. None of us has seen God because we're in the dark, physically and morally. But yet, so many people do claim to know something about God, don't they? How often do you hear people say, "I like to think of God like this"? Or we hear people say, "I think God just doesn't exist." I was listening to Ricky Gervais, the comedian, the other day, so confident that there's nothing beyond this universe, nothing beyond the grave. But it wasn't based on any evidence. It wasn't based on any logic. Most people I meet, they do think that there is a spiritual being, that God exists. But they're happy just to make guesses about that, about what God is like. They just say, "Yeah, look at all the good things in the world. God must be good, and he must love us, and everything will be fine." Or, "Look at all the suffering in the world. God must be an evil tyrant." But it's just opinions. It's just guesswork. You see it really clearly, don't you? Whenever a celebrity dies, you get lots of other celebrities will then tweet, "Well, this person is now up there playing football in the clouds, or they are playing drums with the angels." But how do they know? It's just an assumption. It's not based on anything concrete. We've seen recently, haven't you, that, or we've been reminded of that quote by George Bush. Do you remember when he said, "I've looked into Vladimir Putin's eyes, and I've got a sense of his soul. He's a trustworthy and good chap." It was obviously just a hunch. There was no basis for him to make that claim. But when it comes to God and the big questions of life, we've got to resist that temptation to just make a hunch, just to have a guess. But can we do anything about it? Can we actually know for sure? Last week I was in the Lake District, and it's glorious up there, isn't it? Cleared my head, but I wasn't actually any closer to God. I could go over to St. Paul's. I wouldn't be any closer to God. I could go on a pilgrimage, the Camino de Santiago, but I wouldn't actually get any closer to God. If I do lots of charitable works, I do lots of church activities, I really try hard to live a decent life, I'm not any closer to God. I can't overcome that physical, that moral shortcoming of being in the dark. But I shouldn't be happy with that situation. Do you remember a couple of years ago, you got Jonathan Humphreys and David Cameron saying that they were agnostic, and they're just quite happy with that. They were content with that position. But that's mad, isn't it? How can you be content with that? You wouldn't be content with not knowing what's going to happen in your retirement or what's going to happen to your pension plan. But why are we happy to take a chance on eternity? Surely this really matters. We don't know our maker. We don't know what's going to come next. We don't know if there's a judgment day. We don't know what's going to happen on that judgment day. And nobody else can help us. We're just the blind leading the blind. This is a terrible situation. No one has ever seen God. We can't be relaxed about that. But let's turn to the good news, the second half of this claim, the positive. The only God who is at the Father's side, he has made God known. John is claiming that if we know Jesus Christ, that means we can know God with certainty. And when John says that Jesus has made God known, he means that in two ways. It's possible, he's saying, to know about God, to know the truth about what God thinks, what God is doing, what God cares about. He's not saying we might God will show us what's going to happen with the bond markets, but he will show us through Jesus what it looks like to please God, to understand the best way to live our lives, the best way to parent our kids, the way to use our sexuality. But also, John is claiming that Jesus has made God known in the sense that it's not only possible to know about him, but it's also possible to know him personally, to have a relationship with God. Now, this passage that we've just been looking at, it's obviously the introduction to John's gospel, and verse 18 is the pinnacle of that introduction. Let's just skim through it quickly and see how John builds towards the pinnacle of verse 18. From the top of the page there, verse 1, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him was not anything made that was made." So Jesus is qualified to make God known because he is God. He's been there since the beginning, working alongside God the Father and God the Spirit. Have a look at verse 4 onwards. "In him was life, and the life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it." Jesus is the light of the world. He can enlighten us, John is saying. In this world, we're just scrabbling around in the darkness. We need somebody to come in from the outside and give us clarity. And John is saying that's what's happened. From verse 6, "There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to bear witness about the light, that all might believe through him. He was not the light, but came to bear witness about the light. The true light, which gives light to everyone, was coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made through him, yet the world did not know him. He came to his own, and his own people did not receive him." That's interesting, isn't it? John is saying God has broken in, but some people chose not to know God. You may want to think about that later or discuss that. But here is the relational part of knowing God. "But to all," verse 12, "but to all who did receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God." Can you think of anything better than that? The right to become children of God, who are born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. And then John goes on, we can be sure about this. John and his fellow disciples saw and experienced this relationship with God. From verse 14, "And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we have seen his glory. Glory as of the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth. John bore witness about him and cried out, 'This was he of whom I said, he who comes after me ranks before me, because he was before me. For from his fullness we have all received grace upon grace. For the law was given through Moses, grace and truth came through Jesus Christ.'" And here is the climax. "No one has ever seen God, the only God who is at the Father's side. He has made him known." Jesus can deal with our intellectual darkness. He can deal with our moral darkness. He can give us a relationship with God. Chris Fishlock, who's normally here, was telling me that he once, when he was 7, got to meet the Fonz from Happy Days. Anyone old enough to remember that? He shook his hand. But God is not saying, I'm going to shake your hand in the crowd. I'm not just going to give you a signed photo. I'm not just going to give you my autobiography. He's saying, you can have the privilege of being my son or my daughter. Whatever we've done, whoever we are, if we trust in Jesus, we can know God personally, be part of his family. Now let's just dig into this a bit more. I wonder if you are a Christian here, do you really believe this is what you're offering to those around you when you tell them you're a Christian? Now the phrase here, "he has made him known," it has that sense of God has declared him. Jesus has put God on display in front of us in history. Wonderfully, God himself has come as a human, walked the dusty roads of Palestine. If we were there with him, we could have touched, smelled, and talked with God. As Jesus taught like no other philosopher before or since, he showed us he has the answers to life's biggest questions. When he turned water into wine at a wedding, he showed us that he is the one who can give us that perfect eternity, that new creation full of joy and love. As he healed people with all kinds of diseases, as he fed thousands of people, as he walked on water, as he calmed storms, as he raised the dead, he showed us that he is the one who is in control of all the mess of life, and he can deal with it. But can we actually know for sure now? Well, have a look again at verse 18. No one has ever seen God, the only God who is at the Father's side. He has made him known. Notice John doesn't say who was at the Father's side. He is at the Father's side. He is there now. Jesus has come, he's died, he's risen from the dead, and he is now at the Father's side. So the claim about Jesus being God in the flesh rests on the evidence that Jesus rose from the dead, evidence that we can all investigate now. So let me ask you, have you done that? Now, I must admit, it's a bit embarrassing, but if I could meet somebody this evening and go out for a pint with them, I'd love it to be Bob Dylan. Now, I guess that would be technically possible for me to arrange. I could do some research, try and get in touch with him, find some people who know him. I think he is still technically alive. But probably it's going to be a very fleeting encounter, and it's going to take a lot of work. And however much I'd like to meet him, I don't think I really can be bothered to go to all that trouble. So maybe you feel a bit like that about God. You think, I'm sure it possibly is possible, but am I really going to go to all that trouble? This happened 2,000 years ago. Can I really be sure now? Well, John is saying he has made him known. He's done everything we need to know him. He's done it all. And that is possible for us to access, to us to engage in this relationship. Have a look at verse 14. And the word became flesh and dwelt among us. The us is John and the other disciples. We have seen his glory, glory as of the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth. And the point is that John and the other disciples were chosen by Jesus to be the authoritative witnesses. They smelled, they touched, they saw, they heard, so we now and everyone else down through history can meet God through what they've passed on to us. And so what we have here in our hands in the Bible, it's been burned, it's been banned, it's still a bestseller. This is our access to God. So again, have you read it? Have you interrogated it? Have you offered your friends and colleagues a chance to look at it with you? But as you do that, you'll find more than just historical information. I remember once asking a lady what she'd been doing that morning, and she very strikingly said, well, I've been enjoying time with God. And I remember thinking at the time, I often think of reading the Bible as just engaging with a set of ideas, some principles, some philosophy. But she understood it to be rightly, she was engaging in a relationship with a person. And that's the whole point. Jesus has made God known so that we can have a relationship with God in person. Later in John's Gospel, Jesus said, my words are spirit and life. They're not just words on a page. They are, as we hear them, God speaks to us. We can engage in a relationship with God. I was meeting with someone this morning who wonderfully said about a month ago, has started engaging in this relationship. He's still got lots of questions about God, but he's been reading through John's Gospel. He's decided to enter that relationship with God. Give it a go. You'll find that Jesus will show you his soul, and you can trust him. He promises to show us what God is like, to live with us in this world, so we're ready for the next. But I guess then the question is, well, do you want that? Do you want to engage in that relationship? Anyone here met King Charles? Yesterday at Fleet Street Talks, there was 20% of them had met King Charles. That's one of them. But if I think about that, I think, well, do I really want to meet him? Do I really want him coming round to my house? There'd be a lot of hassle. I'd have to kind of hoover the garden and just do a lot of cleaning. And it'd probably be quite embarrassing if he actually came into my house and all the formalities. And it would be quite embarrassing. But glance up to verse 17. For the law was given through Moses, grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. John is saying, great, we experienced grace and truth when we got to know God. Truth about God, we're no longer in the dark, no longer guessing, no longer relying on spin and fake news, knowing the truth. But also grace, that grace to overcome our moral darkness, getting to know how Jesus has come into our world to die for us, to give us forgiveness, a relationship with God. None of us can stand here and say, I've got a relationship with God because I'm a decent person. But every one of us can say, I can trust in Jesus and his death on my behalf, so I can be washed clean, I can be part of his family, to have that purpose of knowing why we're made, to have that peace of going through this life, knowing that God is on our side for us, leading us. We obviously don't know what's going to happen with the gas prices, with the economy, with our own relationships, with our health, but we do know that God will be for us. He will lead us. It doesn't remove the pain. It doesn't remove all the questions, but knowing that he is for us, that gives us real peace, doesn't it? Certainty that this life is going to be all right. We're going to be with God forever. Now, maybe we can't meet Bob Dylan. Maybe we can't meet the celebrity we'd love to meet. Maybe even our relationships are not what we would love them to be. But each one of us in this room can meet the God who made us. We can know his love for us, know that love that sent his son to die on a cross for us. Knowing God personally is not only possible, but it is the purpose, the pinnacle of human experience and existence. I commend it to you. I'm going to pray for us now, and you might like to join in with this prayer. No one has seen God, the only God who is at the Father's side. He has made God known. Our Heavenly Father, we thank you so much for Jesus Christ. Please would you speak to us through his words so that we might know you better. Please would you grow us in a relationship with you. Please forgive us. Deal with that moral darkness and help us to grow more and more in this most amazing relationship with you. In Jesus' name, amen.